Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So as we mentioned, a 26-year-old U.S. citizen was arrested and charged yesterday with plotting to blow up the Pentagon and Capitol using small radio-controlled or remote-controlled aircraft. Rezwan Firdaus is from a town outside of Boston, was arrested as part of an FBI undercover sting operation. To tell us more is Abby Goodenough, Boston bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, Abby.
Hi, how you doing?
First of all, do we even know the pronunciation of his name? Is it Rezwan Firdaus?
I believe it is, although I could not attest to it for sure.
Right. Well, I mean, that's an indication that the details are few and far between at this point. What do we know?
Right. This came out of nowhere late yesterday afternoon with this affidavit and press release, just surprising us with this information. This guy lived with his brother and parents, apparently. Wasn't married, didn't have any kids. He went to school in Ashland, and in fact, the Boston Globe had written about him a number of years ago when he was in high school. He got in trouble for vandalizing, I believe, at the high school. That was the only mention of him in the press before now. And we know that he has a physics degree from Northeastern here in Boston, and he apparently tried to convert cell phones into detonation devices that he was going to supply, or he thought he was supplying to members of Al-Qaeda.
And is the detonation project a part of this particular indictment, this particular complaint, or is that something that he has known to have done that sort of preceded this?
It's part of this complaint, and the bigger part, I should say, as everybody probably knows already, is he was charged with plotting to blow up the Pentagon and the U.S. Capitol using these remote-controlled little aircraft filled with C4 plastic explosives.
And was he found in possession of any of those items or just what he believed to be those items?
He was found in possession of a bunch of those items, although it's unclear to me at this point whether the plastic explosives that he received yesterday from these undercover agents were actually real explosives or not. The press release was a little cagey about that, and I haven't clarified. But yesterday, basically, they brought him, these undercover FBI agents who had been meeting with him for months and who he thought were conspiring with him. They actually delivered him some of the necessary components, 6 assault rifles, 3 grenades,
wow,
25 pounds of what may have been true explosives. And he had already been delivered this remote-controlled aircraft, which actually was pretty small. It almost looks like a toy, the size of a patio table, maybe.
Well, a patio table
was keeping all this stuff in a storage unit.
Right, but a patio table with C4, and it could be pretty darn dangerous, that's for sure. Lone wolf or Al-Qaeda operative, quickly before we go.
It's unclear. He looks to be a lone wolf. I mean, he thought he was operating with other people. Maybe these FBI agents told him that they were delivering his detonator cell phones to members of Al-Qaeda, and they were actually killing people
right
overseas, and he was pleased about that. But
right,
I don't know that he was actually conspiring with anybody for real.
Abby Goodenough, Boston bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks so much. So we have another case of an arrest of an alleged terrorist after a persistent relationship with federal investigators in which the plot was co-developed by the investigators and the suspect. Joining us is Gordon Carrera, security correspondent for our partner, the BBC, who's looked into FBI strategies to target terrorism suspects. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning.
This fits a pattern, certainly, but let me just posit to you the reason they do it this way, the feds do, is because they're trying to lure the radicalizable Americans into their clutches before Al-Qaeda gets them.
Yes, in a way, it's part of a zero-risk strategy that the U.S. and the FBI have developed, in which they're looking for really anyone who might be capable of being dangerous and to, if you like, get them early, take them off the streets, and try and find a way of prosecute them. And in doing so, they use a large number of informants who go around different parts of the country who can often work undercover, pose as Al-Qaeda terrorists or people linked to other groups, to try and see if these people are dangerous. I think the real issue is whether these people have the capability of carrying out an attack without the role of these informants. Often, these are people with intentions to do something and with talk about doing something. And they might be picked up, for instance, in a mosque or in a community talking about jihad and doing something. The real controversy is whether they would be able to do something without the role of informants and the FBI. And that's really where the controversy lies.
Of course, if they're simply bumblers and crackpots, that doesn't mean they're immune from legal prosecution in any way. But it does bear on the importance of each one of these individual cases, right?
That's absolutely right. So I looked at one case in Newburgh in New York State, in which the controversy was really whether the informant, the FBI informant, had encouraged them and provided them with more than just the means, but some of the ideas of what to do, and had really encouraged them along the process. And people from the community there said, look, these guys were stupid, but they weren't that dangerous. They weren't really capable of anything if it hadn't been for the role of an FBI informant who, in that case, had actually been offering money for people to become involved in this plot and had been talking about money. And so the line about where entrapment starts is very fine. And I put it to FBI officials. I put it to the Attorney General, Eric Holder, and he said the key was these people were always offered other alternatives or a way out.
And isn't an argument possible here that that's exactly the way Al-Qaeda works, that the people might not have been dangerous but for the fact that they were radicalized and encouraged to go down roads they wouldn't have otherwise gone down? So the investigators are using tactics of Al-Qaeda.
I think that's a real point, because I think the truth is that often some of the people who have been involved in actual terrorist attacks are not that clever, are not that smart. You know, you look at people like Richard Reid, the shoe bomber, who came pretty close to blowing up a transatlantic jet with a shoe bomb. You know, this was not someone who was very smart, but had been used by Al-Qaeda to carry out an attack, which fortunately didn't work. And I think it's people like that who the authorities believe, yes, it is worth, if you like, going after these people, finding a way of taking them off the streets so they are not available to Al-Qaeda to be used,
all right,
even if they might not have been dangerous.
We're talking with Gordon Carrera, who's a security correspondent for our partner, the BBC. One final point. You know, we noted in Afghanistan in the beginning when the U.S. went in there and attempted to work with informants in Afghanistan, and of course Afghanistan is different than U.S. territory, but nevertheless, how does a strategy like this become vulnerable to people basically turning in their enemies or, you know, enforcing kinds of vendettas in the way that they inform on people?
Well, I think the role and the nature of these informants is very important. I mean, one of the issues is that they are often people who've got into trouble themselves and have been offered a way out of that trouble by becoming informants. And at later points, they might also be offered cash incentives to continue to be informants. And so I think really the problem there is not so much that they are working for the other side, is that, that they have an incentive to find people who that they can draw to the FBI's attention, and that they have that incentive and a built-in desire to do that. And I think that's really one of the worries is are those people under tight enough control, those informants, rather than necessarily them working for Al-Qaeda? We haven't really seen that in the U.S. yet. You're right, there was a case in Pakistan, Afghanistan, in which that happened, in which an informant was working for the other side. But I think in the U.S., the fear is more what their incentive is to find people who can be drawn into these operations.
Gordon Carrera, security correspondent for our partner, the BBC. Gordon did an investigative piece for the BBC on the FBI strategies for targeting terrorism suspects in the U.S.